This is Mae Brussel. This is the second half of World Watches program number 818, August the 10th, 1987. I apologize for running through these articles so quickly. I'm not even touching the contents of them. There is so much news. I just want to mention to you that they're out there and how these people can be visualized. Scowcroft, Kissinger, Haig, continuously Brzezinski, staying away from the very people that they set up in the NSC. And they have a fail-safe, just as they did at the time of Watergate with all the crimes. Henry Kissinger certainly should have been charged with the wiretapping, forming the White House plumbers, the COINTEL program, Operation Chaos, the Cambodia bombing, but instead he gets the Nobel Peace Prize. Wall Street Journal had a story July 28th last week. Peter Drucker wins the devotion of top firms with eclectic counsel. He's 77 years old. He ranks number one in his field, and he has a passion for the Japanese. Peter Drucker brought Fritz Kramer to this country. This article is literally one quarter of a page or more from the Wall Street Journal, telling about his devotion and fixation about the Japanese government and the Japanese people. He is the man who brought Fritz Kramer to this country. And he is the one helping these big corporations now buy bigger corporations and corporations doing their production overseas where the labor is cheaper and we import it to this country. He's a very important figure, Peter Drucker, in the financial world. And I'll share some of this article with you. But while Kissinger and Kramer and Kissinger and Brzezinski and Scowcroft are on the television, all the major channels, Drucker takes a backseat, except going from one boardroom of one corporation to the other. He is very important to the corporations, and he is in the news. He writes constantly, and he is one of the great manipulators of this not-so-secret team, or otherwise you could describe as the enterprise, like Ledeen calls his company, or you can call it the team that Fawn Hall talks about, or you can call it the Odessa, which I prefer to call it. And again, Drucker's from Frankfurt, Germany, the same location as Fritz Kramer. A story in the Wall Street Journal of a very important person, speaking of Germany, David Fischer, a close aide in the White House who arranged contra activities, who worked with Carl Spitz Channel, and Richard Miller, the publicist. The article's titled, Former Aide Said the White House Knew, this is Donald Reagan, knew he was being paid, Fischer was being paid for pro-contra activities. I'm not going into the Fischer story now, except he challenges Donald Reagan when he said he was unaware of what Fischer was doing. And Fischer says the money I raised, he himself was not aware that it was going to the insurgents, that it was going to the military operations, that he wanted to provide the money, this conservative group, to build contacts in Europe and projects planned in West Germany. Now, Spitz Channel took over Western Goals, which has offices in Munich, Germany. The woman who appointed all these people into these White House jobs was Helene von Damm from Austria, who's back there now. Ronald Reagan rewarded her for being ambassador to Austria after she served 8 years with Ronald Reagan in California as translator for Otto von Bolschwing's TCI Corporation, this is a subsidiary later Albert Hakim bought. Von Bolschwing from the Waffen-SS, very much a Nazi in terms of taking the wealth, the homes, the belongings of Jews, having them exterminated. He was head of the Romanian Iron Guard, and then in the Netherlands, he came to California and worked with his network, and the offices in Germany are a very strong factor to the Western goals that Spitz Channel took over after Larry McDonald was killed in the Korean airline, and also to the group of people that worked in Southeast Asia, Iran, Chile, Central America, that are part of the Christic Institute lawsuit, many of them mentioned as these are the workers of the secret team. The managers higher up are the Druckers, Kramer, Kissinger, Scowcroft, Haig type of people. And those down below can be slapped on the wrist once in a while. But Fischer talks about his plans in West Germany. And one of the plans he had was to establish himself in Europe and raise funds to build a lighted torch on the Berlin Wall. And, of course, they had the president over honoring the graves at Bitburg of the Waffen-SS and going back to the wall for a second time this year. When I talk about characters from the past World War II, there are many people who do not understand that active minds do not end at a certain age, and that many of these social activists of the far right don't die until a ripe old age. There was an article in the Washington Times this week. Intrepid says, it's titled, Spy Chief Was a Mole. It comes from Bermuda and is about Sir William Stevenson, the legendary British intelligence leader. And I talked about him last week on World Watchers, Program 817, how the taking of America, the giving of America began when William Stevenson moved to Rockefeller Center. Then he set up headquarters in Montego Bay down in the Caribbean. He lives in Bermuda. He was commenting upon a new book that's been written about the British spy system. It's called Spy Catcher, very controversial. And he does agree that Mr. Hollis, or Roger Hollis, was a double agent. He was a bad egg if there ever was one. The point about Hollis isn't important right now, or the book Spy Catcher for the moment. It is important to all of us, and we should read it. But the interesting part for me is that Sir William Stevenson is 91. He's active. He writes material for the Royal Gazette in Bermuda, and he mingled the British intelligence with the Americans starting in 1943, which headed up operations such as Permandex with the assassination teams that killed heads of states all over the world. So when I refer to Sir William Stevenson and Intrepid, don't think he's dead and long gone, because he isn't. Another man of this kind of ilk and operation just died a couple of months ago, and I haven't had a chance to put it on the air. Jacob Merrill Kaplan. He died at the age of 95. That's a nice ripe age. William Stevenson, Sir William Stevenson, is 92. The obituary I have says, Jacob Merrill Kaplan, a merchant and self-made financier, became one of New York's foremost philanthropists. He died Saturday at the age of 95. He made his wealth from Welch grape juice, which he organized, owned, and headed from 1940 to 1958. In 1947, he established his philanthropy, the J.M. Kaplan Fund. And 1947 was the year the CIA was formed. It was the year the National Security Council was formed. And the J.M. Kaplan Fund, the obituary said, through his inventiveness and diversity, was known for... Well, they called it inventiveness or diversity. It actually was a front, a part of the CIA foundations that was funding money for the liberals, the type of people that worked with liberal radio stations, liberal newspapers, black activists, civil rights. The Kaplan Fund was used to infiltrate through the operation that made it appear that people were liberal or leftist, the CIA money to control those operations until the parties became really neutralized, and there was no more voice or strong opposition, because the Kaplan Fund had taken over the labor movement and the civil rights movement, the blacks and the artists, and the CIA funds were channeled through them. The obituary says this fund won recognition as a consistent supporter of the arts, of civil liberties, of human rights, of the NAACP legal defense, and the education funds. And its donations range from seed money to encourage musicians to commission works for composers and for helping the New York Botanical Garden be saved from extinction, a grove of virgin hemlock. So these organizations had their funding, their seed money or their support, a good part of it from the J.M. Kaplan Fund, which was a CIA foundation. I'll do more on that later if you want, and some of the groups that they supported. But one more news item I want to get share with you before we get to the new FBI director. A wedding announcement was in the newspaper this past weekend. I'm sure all of you or many of you saw it. It's one wedding I'd like to go to. I usually turn down invitations and don't particularly enjoy going to weddings that much. But this is one that I feel slighted. I wasn't invited, and maybe I can go to a reception party. It said, the newspaper said, Libyan leader Colonel Muammar Gaddafi married the 25-year-old daughter of Saudi Arabian oil magnate Adnan Khashoggi. Milan's Corriere della Sera announced that it's highly reliable that Gaddafi wed Nabila Khashoggi as a gift to the bride's family. Gaddafi has signed a contract to sell Khashoggi Libyan crude oil below the market price. Now, Khashoggi is related to the, or his father was a physician to the Saudi family. He's very much and very close to the Saudi Arabian oil. I don't know why Khashoggi would need a deal to buy Libyan oil, But this is an interesting story, and the implications are just amazing because of the relationship of Gaddafi to Khashoggi, rather, to Michael Ledeen, to Cyrus Hashemi, to Albert Hakim, to the CIA. He was paid by the Lockheed Corporation and funded by the CIA for years. He had a bad streak of luck at the time of the Iran-Contra affair, and the Sultan of Brunei bought his yacht for $50 million. And also, he was on the board of a bank that was in part of the Furmark operation that we're going to blackmail William Casey and this administration. It was a bank in Monte Carlo, and a British gentleman named Roland Roland bought the entire bank in Monte Carlo and all the papers accorded with it. These elements of the Khashoggi, Hakim, Furmark, Casey, Cyrus Hashemi, who was murdered, Cyrus Hashemi, all of these interconnecting links of Iran-Contra are very important to the entire fabric that was never brought up at these hearings. The Israeli, the Saudi Arabian, the secret team, the Odessa network, the enterprise. But this marriage, it is an interesting one. I'd love to see those two families together, but I don't think they'll invite me. Now, I wanted to get immediately onto the appointment of the new FBI director. I'll do as much as I can this with the remaining time, because I had to update those other stories, or wanted to do it with you, and then we'll get back to matters later. Dick Cheney from Wyoming is a very staunch conservative Republican. He was on the Select Committee of the Iran-Contra hearings. Formerly, he was the White House Chief of Staff under President Ford. As I say, one of the staunchest conservatives with very close ties to the Reagan administration. And his wife, Lynn Cheney, is chairman of the National Endowment for Humanities. So you know what direction that's going to go. But I want to give you a quote of Gerald Ford, whose chief of staff, Mr. Dick Cheney, worked for him. This was from 1975, when the Rockefeller Commission was putting out their report on investigations of murders, including the one of John Kennedy, the former president of the United States. And on that Rockefeller Commission was Ronald Reagan, appointed on this commission. And Gerald Ford and Mr. Cheney had this to say. This is from the Star and Times of June the 10th, 1975, Kansas City. President Ford said that material gathered by the Rockefeller Commission on political assassination plots by the CIA would be kept secret because it would not be in the national interest to divulge it. The President of the United States is elected in 1960. He's shot in 1963. A team set up by Robert Mayhew of the CIA, the FBI, and the user organization hire Santos Trafficante, whose agents were with John Kennedy and this one Judith Exner in and out of the White House. And these men were wanted, or not wanted, but known as the world's greatest drug traffickers. Santos Trafficante is named by Kung Sa in Burma, working with Theodore Shackley in drug traffic in Southeast Asia. And Trafficante and Marcello, Carlos Marcello and John Rosselli worked with Mayhew. And the assassination teams were protected and have direct links to persons that are being recognized in the news today. And Gerald Ford and Dick Cheney believed then that the CIA should keep assassination plots secret because it would not be in the best interest of national, it'd be in the national interest to divulge it. And our new FBI director has that same mind. So you can make sure if he has a 10-year term with William Webster, formerly the FBI, in the CIA for 10 years, it will be at least 10 years or till hell freezes over, till any of the assassination investigation ever comes to the light of day on John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, or Martin Luther King, just those three. Now, the Monterey Herald had a story July 24th, federal judge nominated for FBI director, and they pointed out that he's strongly backed by former Senator John Tower, Republican of Texas, who first recommended him for a U.S. attorney. Mr. Sessions is also having the approval of other Texas politicians, even a Democrat, such as Senator Lloyd Benson. Now, you remember that I did a broadcast, or many broadcasts through the years, on John Tower and his relationship to Lee and Marina Oswald coming into this country from the Soviet Union. I'll do a little bit more and update you and remind you of the role of John Tower in this particular operation. Also, the articles about Mr. Sessions, if you've been reading them, William Sessions, one from the Washington Post, July 24th, federal judge, this is about his being nominated, And the article says, Mr. Sessions, a Republican, was named U.S. Attorney by President Richard Nixon in 1971. This is at the time when the martial law plat was made. It had already been written up at Carlisle, Pennsylvania. And Mr. Gufrida was in California with Reagan and Edwin Meese. But it said Nixon had appointed him, and this also was the time of the COINTELPRO program of domestic operation in the United States, and Operation Chaos run by the FBI, used by Ronald Reagan when he was governor. And the article says Sessions was then appointed for the federal bench. He was U.S. attorney by Nixon. Federal bench appointed by Gerald Ford in 1974. Now, Gerald Ford was put on the Warren Commission when John Kennedy was killed. Nixon was in Dallas that same day and a few days prior to it. And Gerald Ford was an active member of the CIA and FBI while working on the Warren Commission and making those famous leaks that Ollie North complained about or Richard Nixon compared about, where he was leaking to Time magazine the story of Oswald's diary, which turned out to never be proved as having been Lee Harvey Oswald's diary. William Sessions gained national attention, according to the Washington Post, when he presided over two trials stemming from the slaying of U.S. District Court Judge John H. Wood, Jr., known as Maximum John. Sessions is strongly backed, as I say, by these people like John Tower. Now, in the Hudson Valley Chronicle that I've quoted many times, published by David Wimple in July 77, David Wimple took the affidavit of Robert Byron Watson, who said that John Tower was part of the enterprise, the drug traffic and enterprise, that he worked with a Mr. Christ Kametches, K-A-M-E-T-C-H-E-S, a cocaine smuggling operation that came out of El Paso, Texas, from South America. It was a cocaine distribution centered in Atlanta, Georgia. Kametches said that Bobby Jones, Lyndon Johnson's pal, was safe because he could keep large amounts of cocaine around, and he was safe in El Paso or wherever because the Drug Enforcement Agency was part of the drug problem. And Robert Byron said even Senator John Tower and Governor Dolph Briscoe worked for the association called the Enterprise with the Syndicate. The Syndicate controls the entire state of Texas, just about. So this John Tower, mentioned in affidavits in 1977, recommends a judge who is going to be hearing the case of Judge Wood, who was killed allegedly for being hard on drug dealers. The murder of Judge Wood was very, very important. The role of John Tower in bringing Lee and Marina to this country, I updated this past March, program 795. If you want the tape, it's available, the link of Lee and Marina Oswald, and also the article of the Robert Byron Watson affidavit is available. I can make reprints if you want. I'm not anxious to do it, but I will. Some of you have that information. But Tower is behind Sessions. Sessions took the case of the murder of John Wood, and it's very important to study that case. Now, Federal Judge William Webster was from St. Louis, Missouri. Then he went on to become FBI director. He's now CIA director. Webster was the judge when he set up the Abscam operation, which sent a lot of preponderant Democratic congressmen to jail. Webster infiltrated the El Salvadorian refugees. He helped send many of them back to the death squads in El Salvador. Webster went from a judge in Missouri to the FBI director to the CIA director. James Earl Ray, in his new book, Tennessee Waltz, talks about the role of Judge Webster in framing him and trying to blame his brother for a bank robbery. And John Ray, the brother of James Earl Ray, now in a Tennessee jail, who wrote a book about his being framed, said his brother John went before Judge William Webster with a man named Ronald Goldenstein, and they were charged with robbing a bank. And the judge sent his brother to prison for 18 years. He got out. But James Earl Ray blames Judge Webster for framing his brother. Now, James Earl Ray in his book connects not only Judge Webster to the case of the assassination of Martin Luther King in the way that he intimidates and prosecutes and tries to put the pressure on the James Earl Ray family instead of the real assassins. And James Earl Ray connects Clyde Watts of Oklahoma to his case. Watts was a close friend of General Walker and was in the home of General Walker when Jack Ruby was there. And also G. Robert Blakey, the chief counsel of the Senate House Select Committee on Assassinations with Chairman Louis Stokes, were looking into the murder of Martin Luther King, or were supposed to. And they covered up the tentacles to the assassination of Martin Luther King, the same Louis Stokes from the Iran-Contra Committee who's covered up so many of these conspiracies. A person named in James Earl Ray's new book, Tennessee Waltz, besides Clyde Watts and G. Robert Blakey, is Randolph Irwin Rosenson. And he was locked up for drug traffic, and Ray knew him. Rosenson's attorney in New Orleans, when he was arrested in 1966, was a man named G. Ray Gill. And I'm going into these details that pertain to Webster because Webster, as the FBI man in St. Louis, Missouri, was covering up the real tentacles of the conspiracy and trying to blame John Ray, the brother of James Earl Ray, hoping that the charges he gave John would rub off and they'd both keep looking guilty of various crimes. Rosenson, as I say, had an attorney in New Orleans named W. Gray Gill. And in 1962, 1 year before Kennedy was killed, G. Ray Gill hired David Ferry as his investigator, the one that Clay Shaw worked with in New Orleans, the one that Jim Garrison wanted for playing a role in the murder of John Kennedy. And Rosenson was working with G. Ray Gill in, that was his person, attorney that he used, who was working with David Ferry. And Ferry was investigating for Gill, and they were investigating the deportation proceedings against Carlos Marcello. Robert Kennedy had sent him out of the country. The Kennedy administration was against crime boss Carlos Marcello. And Robert Kennedy was described as a person that Marcello wanted to do away with when he was in attorney general. He was in exile in Guatemala and came back. Marcello was released and flown back to the United States by David Ferry, who was doing investigative work for the attorney G. Ray Gill, who also represented Randolph Irwin Rosenson, a person whose name James Earl Ray had. Marcello stood trial in New Orleans for citizen falsification. He was acquitted. November 23rd, after Kennedy was killed in 1963, David Ferry got a call from the G. Ray Gill, the attorney and friend of David Ferry's, and Mr. Rosenson, whose name James Earl Ray had a few years later, saying that he was a suspect in the murder of John Kennedy. So David Ferry went to the New York police and told them that he was preoccupied helping attorney G. Ray Gill, and he was preparing a defense for Carlos Marcello citizenship. And I hope this isn't too confusing for you, but the Webster, who was FBI director, was a judge earlier. Now he's our CIA director, and all of this information was bypassed, the things that James Earl Ray knew while they locked his brother in jail for 10 years, which didn't seem to serve much purpose and didn't prove that he did the bank robbery they said he did. Now, in 1980, John Ray was paroled from federal prison, and as I say, he blames the FBI and Judge Webster for sitting on the true information about the real story behind the Martin Luther King assassination. Now, the interesting aspects of this Mr. William Sessions becoming the FBI director is that he was in charge of the murder case of Judge Wood, who was listening to the narcotics traffic trial, and two were convicted. But a report came out, Jim Mars wrote in Dallas News Tribune, June the 11th, 1982, an article titled, "Is Kennedy's Assassin Sitting in the Texas Jail?" And this article has to do with a man named Mr. Harrelson. Many of you know the name Charles V. Harrelson, who claimed at the time that he was arrested for shooting and arranging the murder of Judge Wood that he was one of the men behind the murder of John Kennedy. And his face back in 1963 closely resembles one of the tramps. And the point is that William Sessions, the judge in the case, ignored Charles Harrelson, pays no attention to his claims that when he gets out, he'll blow the case on the Kennedy assassination. And he's been isolated from being able to tell his participation or doesn't want to because he'll be killed in jail. But the same way Gerald Ford's office with Mr. Cheney as his chief of staff believed, those guys believed that the assassinations in this country should never come out, there are court cases in Texas and judges and the now FBI director who could open up these cases but believe quite openly, probably just like Gerald Ford said, that you don't have to know. These matters are too important for you to know. Now, Jim Mars is a long writer from Dallas, Texas, an investigator, and he said Charles V. Harrelson, a contracted hitman who recently was charged with the slaying of federal judge John Wood in San Antonio on May 29, 1979, has admitted he participated in the Kennedy assassination. I keep referring to the Christic Institute suit that was filed May 29, 1986, and Judge Wood was murdered May 29, 1979. And there's a lot in common between the drug dealers that are involved in the Christic Institute suit and the drug dealers, specifically Edwin Wilson and the persons that took weapons from China Lake, that I'll develop for you, and I admit it's complicated, but there are direct linkages, or maybe I'll have to chart it out with diagrams to show you the links of the persons who killed Judge Wood with William Sessions sitting on the lid of it, and yet they connect to the current-day Christic Institute persons who are named in the suit and participated. Edwin Wilson isn't in the suit, but Theodore Shackley is and Thomas Kleins, and these people had that same continuity that has been named in the Christic Affidavit, going back to the Bay of Pigs operations or to the hiring that Robert Mayhew did in 1960, prior to the Bay of Pigs, of assassination teams. Harrelson was arrested September the 1st, 1980. The judge was killed May 29th. September the 1st, 1980, he was high on drugs, allegedly with a pistol in his hand. At that time, Harrelson confessed to the Judge Wood assassination. He said he did it, and he also participated in the Kennedy assassination. There were three tramps taken away by the police near Dealey Plaza minutes after Kennedy was killed. I'm reading the Jim Mars article from the Dallas News Tribune. Three men were taken away. Lee Bowers saw three men sneak into an empty railroad car right after the assassination in the Union Rail Yards just behind the Texas School Book Depository. Moments after the assassination, the train was halted when it started to move. Bowers summoned the Dallas police. The three were taken at gunpoint, marched to the Dallas Sheriff's Office. Once in Dallas police custody, the men disappeared. No fingerprints taken, names taken, ever made public. Now, of the three tramps that were in Dealey Plaza, and Jim Mars notes that they weren't tramps, they were well-dressed, a little disheveled when they were picked up, but definitely not tramps, one of them is referred to as Frenchie, and he was behind the fence in the railroad yard there and picked up along with a man that could be Charles Harrelson, and Frenchie, the same man, was identified in the area around the Lorraine Motel when Martin Luther King was killed. And Frenchie is tied into the coup in France that almost took place when the arrangements were made to kill Charles de Gaulle. And this is the coup of the colonels that they planned because de Gaulle gave Algeria their freedom. And I want to update the coup of the colonels with Oliver North attempting these operations and the relationship of the attempted coups in France, the colonels from Algeria, Frenchmen who fought in Algeria and tried to kill Charles de Gaulle, to the murder of John Kennedy. But one of the men at the tramps at Dealey Plaza could be Charles Harrelson. He wanted to talk, and the time is running out now. So I'll have to continue with our new FBI director, William Sessions, and what he didn't do at the trial of Judge Wood, and how he and FBI Director Webster, who is now our CIA director, are controlling these operations and investigations. And, of course, Gerald Ford and Mr. Cheney, Representative Cheney, who was on the Iran-Contra affair hearings, the Intelligence Committee, keep a lid on these investigations. There's a continuity of people through the years who kept the secrets on the Kennedy assassination, such as Gerald Ford on the Warren Commission, and then citing the Rockefeller Commission's right to secrecy. And the coup lines are strong, and the new FBI director, Sessions, sat on this story, the real story of who killed Judge Wood. As I say, our time is up, and I hoped to do a complete part on that, but I'll have to do it next week. But I think you get the idea that I'm trying to say about the linkage through Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King's assassinations, and also the law enforcement people who are put on as judges, such as William Sessions, by Richard Nixon, who was in Dallas, by Gerald Ford, who was on the Warren Commission, then became president. And they are pushing William Sessions to go now from Texas to Washington to be in charge of all of our law enforcement, and with John Tower pushing this nomination also. And we have to get a little historical perspective, or hysterical, whichever way you feel, about the new FBI director. This is Mae Brussel. There's just so much news. We run through this pretty fast. I do with you. I hope it connects. You remember some of these names. I'll be back with you next week to continue hopefully begin right away with some more on William Sessions, our new FBI director.